Appendix 4, Historical Survey. When we approach the subject of the will, we are faced with a peculiar, even a paradoxical situation. We find that, in the past, and approximately up to the beginning of the century, the will has been the object of widespread interest among philosophers, theologians, educators, and some psychologists with a philosophical turn of mind. A historical account and discussion of the many, often contrasting concepts of the will lie outside of the scope of this survey. These concepts constitute one of the objectives of the research advocated in the Will Project outlined above. Yet it seems appropriate, in the interests of providing a perspective and a framework, to indicate briefly some of the more significant views of those who have dealt with the subject of the will. In India, Raja Yoga method of psychological and spiritual development stresses the need of using the will. In Panchali's Yoga Sutras, we read, "The control of these modifications of the mind is to be brought about through tireless endeavour and through non-attachment. When the object to be gained is sufficiently valued, and the efforts towards its attainment are persistently followed without intermission, then the steadiness of the mind is secured. The attainment of this stage, spiritual consciousness, is rapid for those whose will is intensely alive. Those who employ the will likewise differ, for its use may be intense, moderate, or gentle. According to Patanjali, one of the siddhis, or psychic powers, the yogin has to develop its irresistible will, pragmaya. The great importance attributed by Zen Buddhism to the will is reflected in the following statements by D.T. Suzuki. The most important fact that lies behind the experience of enlightenment, therefore, is that the Buddha made the most strenuous attempt to solve the problem of ignorance, and his utmost willpower was brought to bear upon a successful issue of the struggle. Enlightenment, therefore, must involve the will as well as the intellect. The will is the man himself, and Zen appeals to it. Europe has had its voluntaristic schools of thought, which assign to the will a central position in man. Augustine stated that man and God are nothing else than will. Nihil allur quam vontades sunt. Dun Scotus, the outstanding representative of the voluntaristic theological school, asserted that the nature of the soul is will. Leibniz can be regarded as one of the pioneers in upholding a dynamic conception of the psychological life. He emphasized the purpose as the basic characteristic of the will and maintained that its purpose and activity are basic in mental life, quod non agit, non existit. Later voluntaristic conceptions are held and expounded by such philosophers as Fichte, Schelling, von Hartmann, and Nietzsche. But the very broad conceptions of the will they put forward embraced all kinds of connotations, as well as an unconscious will, and therefore did not recognize the specific characteristics of the human will, that is, conscious choice. In France, several philosophers have discussed the will. Outstanding among them was Maine de Biran, according to whom will manifests as an effort to surmount resistances, principally created by the body and the desires, and is the direct expression of the I, moi. Others, who recognized the primacy of the will, were Secretant, Ravaisen, and particularly Blondel, who stressed the dynamic aspect, action. Two Polish philosophers have emphatically supported voluntaristic conception. One, Sikorski, opposed Descartes' I think, therefore I am, with his I will, therefore I think and am. The other, W. Lutowski, was the author of a book in German, Seelenmacht, and one in English, The World of Souls. The Russian Oponaski, in his book The Fourth Way, underlines the importance of the will and gives instruction for its training. Another important contribution was made by Søren Kierkegaard. Along a similar existential line is Heidegger's concept of the will, which has been ably described by Jay Macquarie in his contribution in The Concepts of Willing, Will and Existence. In sharp contrast to these various voluntaristic conceptions, not only has modern scientific psychology in general abstained from dealing with the will, but a number of psychologists have even denied its existence. This surprising fact can be attributed to various causes. One is the prevalence of a narrow conception of the scientific method, which has been identified with objective quantitative techniques, measurements, statistics, etc., as used in the natural sciences. This has resulted in the will not being considered a subject amenable to scientific investigation. This position has contributed to the widespread acceptance of the strictly deterministic view assumed by behaviorism and Freudian psychoanalysis. Another cause for denying the existence of the will is the reaction of the purely theoretical and often metaphysical conceptions of the will held by philosophers and theologians, and to the consequent endless discussions about free will. Another is the reaction against the mistaken conception of the will on the part of 18th century moralists and educators who saw it as a repressive and coercive function, systemically opposed to and inimical to natural human drives. And then there is the fact of the close connection existing between the will and the self, or ego. Until recently, scientific psychology bestowed only a limited attention on the study of the self. The will has thus been correspondingly neglected. The fact that academic psychologists have found the subject of the will both intriguing and embarrassing has been expressed in the unconscious humour in the following statements in the Dictionary of Psychological and Psychoanalytic Terms by H.B. and A.C. English, a work compiled with praiseworthy precision and objectivity. Popular psychology has a pretty complete doctrine of will and voluntary activity. Scientific psychology has scarcely reached the point where it is possible to define how the terms are to be used. It is probable that a number of quite distinct sets of facts have been brought together under the one term. However, it does not seem possible to dispense with the concept of a class of behaviours to be called voluntary that differ from other behaviours in a number of ill-defined ways. Though it is not easy to say how, voluntary movement does seem to be empirically different from involuntary movement. S. Hiltner has remarked in a more drastic statement, though for different reasons both psychology and theology have been occupied with matters which made the concept of the will unnecessary or even a positive affront, the time has come for a reconsideration of whether, as Mark Twain is reported to have said about reports of his own death, the demise of the will has been exaggerated. The existing confusion and diversity of opinion concerning the will may be ascribed to several factors. Many attributed to it too broad and general a meaning, including even an unconscious will, although a clear awareness and a deliberate choice of an aim or purpose to be attained is an essential characteristic of the human will. Then again, several writers have dealt with the subject in a loose and popular way, emphasizing only the power of the will and making exaggerated claims about its wonders. In addition, other writers have used the word will when actually referring to other psychological functions. Two examples will illustrate this. P. E. Levy, in his book La Education Rationale de Volonté, limits himself almost entirely to speaking about the technique of suggestion. Ducatal and Wacolia emphasize only the power of the imagination in Les Miracles de Volonté. Dr. W. H. Sheldon's Psychology and the Promethean Will consists, for the most part, of an able exposition of the nature and meaning of conflict, but he gives the will only a cursory and incidental mention. On the other hand, some writers have dealt with the will without actually using the word. A case in point being Mothurin's excellent self-knowledge and self-discipline. While it cannot be said that the will has been totally ignored by modern academic psychologists, it must be pointed out that most of those who have dealt with it have afforded it only partial consideration and have failed to recognize its central importance and position in human psychic life. For example, Wundt, who is considered a voluntarist, but his conception of the will is one-sided and limited. He reduces it to a series of emotional processes. Foreseeing the end to be attained is omitted as unessential. At different periods of his scientific activity, William James made valuable contributions to the psychology of the will, fully recognizing the reality and importance of the willing function. His Principles of Psychology contains an analysis of the various types of decision-making, which emphasizes the motor element or impulse of representations or mental images. He also referred to the power of voluntary attention and pointed out the importance of the stage of information of affirmation, the fiat, but he formulated no coherent and inclusive concept of the will. Freedom of the will, he concluded, was a mastery, but the deterministic view can never receive objective proof, and he asserted, "I myself hold with the free willists." He also declared, "I will go a step further with my will. Not only act with it, but believe as well, believe in my individual reality and creative power." The Swiss psychologist Edouard Capelier recognized that an act, in order to be voluntary, must be intentional and imply a choice and preparation for the future. But he asserted that every voluntary act is the expression of a conflict and a struggle, and the function of the will is precisely to resolve the conflict. This last statement, however, is not consistent with the fact that some voluntary acts are effortless. For instance, those in which the self-willing gives assent to an urge or drive, which it considers justified or good. Moreover, the direction of the execution, which is the last stage of the willed action, does not usually require conflict, being fundamentally the supervision of the activities executed by other psychological functions. Another Swiss psychologist, Jean Piaget, also mentioned that willing always presumes a conflict of tendencies, but his analysis of the process of willing does not include a recognition of its specific nature, which he reduces to an interaction between cognition and effect. Various proponents of depth psychology hold diverse and divergent views about will functions. Freud and orthodox psychoanalysts ignore or even deny the existence of the will on the basis of their deterministic philosophy. Determinism should be considered a philosophy because it lacks scientific proof, as William James stated, and developments in modern science are increasingly demonstrating. Jung, at the end of Psychological Types, writes, "I regard as will the sum of psychic energy, which is disposable to consciousness." According to this conception, the process of the will would be an energetic process that is released by conscious motivation. A psychic process, therefore, which is conditioned by unconscious motivation, I would not include under the concept of the will. However, while he recognized and even emphasized the reality and the dynamic function of goals, aims, and purposes, he did not make an investigation of the various aspects and stages of the will, nor did he include the use of the will in his therapeutic procedures. Alfred Adler regarded the will chiefly as an unconscious striving to overcome physical and psychological inferiorities, as having a compensatory function. A French psychologist, Edgar Fauty, an independent follower of Adler's individual psychology, made a detailed study of the connection between Adler's doctrine and practice and the will psychology, as well as between Adler's views and characterology, conceived as the investigation and classification of different tendencies and behavior. Charles Bourdin, who founded and directed for many years the Institut International de Psychologie Psychotherapy in Geneva, made a penetrating analysis of the willing function, according chief importance to the stage of decision. It implies, he says, sacrifice and relinquishing, and he points out that the word decision is derived from the Latin verb carere, which means to cut. Beyond this, however, he did not extend his subtle and valuable investigations on the functioning of psychological energy to the development of the concept of the will, nor did he make use of the techniques of willing in his psychotherapeutic work. Among other depth psychologists, Otto Rank accords special prominence to the will function and has worked out a theoretical system based on it. The complicated nature of his theory precludes a brief description of it here, and moreover, Ranke changed his views to the extent of adopting contrary standpoints at different times in the course of its elaboration. As Ira Prokof says in his able exposition of Ranke's ideas, he was interested mainly in stressing the degree of freedom that the individual possesses, in contrast to the biological determinationism implied in Freud's theory of the instincts. The human being, Ranke says, experiences his individuality in terms of his will, and this means that his personal existence is identical with his capacity to express his will in the world. But Ranke, who had been strongly influenced by Nietzsche, made no distinction between instinct, wish, and will, or between the self-assertive, selfish will of the ego and the will as a primary instrument of creative and religious experience, the will to immortality. Moreover, he made a sharp differentiation between his theories on the will and his use of the conscious will as a therapeutic agent, maintaining that the two have to be kept separate. Side by side with these developments, and mostly antedating them, a certain amount of experimental investigation of the ways in which the will function operates has been carried out by various researchers. Narcisse Ack and Albert Michaud may be regarded as pioneers in this field, followed by Aveling, Bartlett, and some others. These are mentioned by Aveling in Personality and Will, in which he summarizes and ably discusses their methods and results. The approach was experimental, based on measures of reaction time, of a number of electrical parameters of the organism, and of other physiological variables. Many interesting results were observed, among them the importance of attention, thus confirming the intuition of William James, and the distinction between will, connotation, and striving. Between true willing and striving, or carrying out the operation willed, there was a difference in the kind of mental processes. A volition ensuing even in difficult action may be absolutely effortless. Will is not itself effort, though it may initiate effort of an extraordinary kind. Along with the experiments, both Ack and Aveling made fine introspective analyses of the various phases of the willed act. Their descriptions are too long to be reported here. I shall mention only that one of the most important phases described is the experience of an actual or lived element expressed as, "I truly will." According to Ack, this experience is essential to all voluntary decision. When it is not experienced, the conscious process is not a voluntary one. Other experimental investigations carried out by Webb and Lankes demonstrate the difference between perseveration, perseverance, and will. But this promising line of early experimental research has not been actively pursued. We have a footnote here. Recently, an important series of researches has been carried on which demonstrate experimentally the action of the will in producing specific electric waves in the brain, as well as physiological and psychological effects. These researches have been conducted chiefly in the United States and Japan. Particular mention should be made of the work done by Alma E. Green, director of the Psychophysiological Laboratory of the Menninger Foundation, and his wife, Elsie M. Green. They have summed up their findings in an article, Voluntary Control of Internal States, Psychological and Physiological, in the Journal of Transpersonal Psychology, 1970, No. 1. Returning to text. Only in the last few years has the subject of willing attracted the attention of and been discussed by some psychologists, psychoanalysts, and other writers. L. H. Farber has published a thought-provoking and controversial book, The Ways of the Will. In it, he postulates two realms of the will. The first is not a matter of experience and is therefore unconscious. The second is experienced as a present and consciously goal-directed. While to regard as will the unconscious moving in a certain direction, first realm, does not seem warranted, Farber's clear and explicit conception of the will as a responsible mover is valuable. Without it, he remarks, we tend to smuggle will into our psychological systems under other names. An important contribution on the central position of the will in the human constitution and in psychotherapy has been made by Wolfgang Kirchmer. Following the lead of the psychiatrist Ernst Kirchmer, who in his investigations of man's various biological constitutions and brain physiology advocated occupational therapy for mental patients, he asserts that the will is the basis, the ground of knowledge, because it, like everything else in man, presupposes and requires energy, dynamicism, and movement. He regards archetypes as basic forms of the will in operation and draws attention to the relationship between knowledge and will. He considers the central task of psychotherapy to be the re-establishing of the union between them and thus creating the synthesis of the personality. In recent years, two developments have opened the way for dealing with the subject of the will in a more understanding and fruitful manner. One has been the rapid growth of the existential, humanistic, and transpersonal psychologies. The other is the emergence of a broader and at the same time more refined conception of the scientific method. This new conception has brought to light, through the ideas of general semantics, and more directly through the open-minded and original analysis of the scientific method by A.H. Maslow. In this context, Frankl's concept and practice of logotherapy deserves mention and appreciation. He emphasized the will to meaning as a fundamental urge and need. Recently, an important and valuable book on the will has appeared, Rollo May's Love and Will. The author clearly recognizes and comments forcefully upon humanity's present lack of capacity for willing and the urgent necessity for the rediscovery and use of the will. He says, the inherited basis for our capacity for will and decision has been irrevocably destroyed, and ironically, if not tragically, it is exactly in this portentous age when power has grown so tremendously and decisions are so necessary and fateful that we find ourselves lacking any new basis for will. In this analysis of the willing function, May ably points out that connections between wish and will, from which emerge some of the essential characteristics of the will. But according to him, the basis, the root of the will, is what he calls and describes as intentionality. Intentionality in human experience underlies will and decision. It is not only prior to will and decision, but makes them possible. This same recognition has been formulated in Chapter 12 of the present book. Intentionality is an essential part of the first stage of the willing action. It must precede and makes possible all the subsequent stages. It is inherent in the goal, purpose, and motivation, and involves evaluation and meaning, which, as we have seen, are all aspects of the first stage of willing. An important recognition which Rollo May makes is the close connection between intentionality and identity. It is in intentionality and will that the human being experiences his identity. I is the I of I can. What happens in human experience is I conceive, I can, I will, I am. The I can and I will are the essential experience of identity. This is in full agreement with the previously mentioned statements of Keswatzky and Aveling. Another valuable contribution of Rollo May in his chapter on the relation between love and will, man's task, he says, is to unite love and will. They are not united by biological growth, but must be part of our conscious development, the relating of love and will. Points towards maturity, integration, wholeness. He also associates will with commitment and care. But on this point, a reservation is called for because of the existence of a selfish will. This might be considered the opposite of care and the communion of consciousness, which, according to May, characterize the higher will. Another point in May's book calls for some reservation in his great emphasis on the demonic, which he makes without clearly distinguishing between its various forms. Socrates' daimon, for example, is more akin to the transpersonal self than to the dark, instinctual demonic forces. While transpersonal psychology has not yet dealt specifically with the subject of will, Maslow has made a brief but clear reference to the direct use of the will in a transpersonal direction. In principle, it is possible through adequate understanding to see voluntarily under the aspect of eternity, to see the sacred and symbolic in and through the individual here and now instance. Psychosynthesis, in which are combined the empirical, existential, humanistic, and transpersonal conceptions and methods, accords to the will a preeminent position and regards it as the central element and direct expression of the I or self. In keeping with its empirical approach, psychosynthesis directs the main attention not to the concept of the will, but to the analysis of the willing action in its various stages, to the specific aspects and qualities of the will, and to the practical techniques for the development and the optimum use of the will function. The considerable amount of investigation and discussion of the will, which this survey cursorily examines, is not incompatible with the previously made statement about the neglect or even the denial of will by psychologists. The investigations mentioned have been generally ignored by the mainstream of modern academic psychology, and in any case have made no impact upon it. They can be said to have formed a more or less independent rivulet, which has remained dissociated from the mainstream. Two recent books give a vivid picture of the confusion, misconceptions, and clash of opinions that still encompass the subject of the will. In one of them, The Concept of Willing, a number of psychologists and theologians have made a serious and commendable attempt to define this concept. While most of the contributions present interesting information and points of view, the book's editor, Dr. James N. Lapsley, honestly admits in his discerning and objective summary, revealing entitled The Concept of the Will Alive, that just as there was no consensus about how one gets to the phenomenon of the function of willing, so there was none regarding what one finds when and if one arrives. Preusser ends his able historical survey in this collection by pointing out the inadequacies in past and present conceptions of the will, and comes to the conclusion that the problem of the will remains a difficult challenge to psychologists, theologians, philosophers, ethicists, and all others who are interested in willing. In the other book, Quasi-Volure, What Is It to Will?, comprises a series of papers by a group of medical doctors and theologians delivered at a conference held at Bonneval, France, in the psychiatric clinic of Dr. Henry A. It presents a variety of divergent, even contradictory, views, ranging from St. Thomas Aquinian's traditional concept of will to the extreme position held by a psychoanalyst, Dr. S. Leclerc, who candidly avows his perplexity about what to do with the concept of will, constituting as it does a problem which has not been formulated in the analytical field. He goes so far as to deny the reality of Freud's libido as an energy, relegating it to the status of a metaphorical expression. It is little wonder that, in his introductory summary of the various papers, Father L. Bernier concedes that they create more problems than they solve. Besides the 9 theoretical papers, the book contains 2 valuable essays on the methods of training the will. This is a subject which a number of educators, Payot, Emu, de Chavez, etc., have dealt with. The most striking conclusion to be drawn from this historical survey is that attempts to solve the problem of the will on a theoretical, intellectualistic lines have led not only to no solution, but to contradiction, confusion, and bewilderment. This being so, a way out of the impasse needs to be sought in another direction, one that can produce useful and practical results. Such a way exists. Its starting point is the direct existential experience of willing, unhampered by preconceived notions, and it proceeds to a description of the data yielded and to the institution of experiments on the various stages, characteristics, and uses of the willing action. The present book has been written with the specific purpose of providing signposts pointing in such a direction and presenting a comprehensive program of research and application in the field of this neglected but so important and essential reality of human life. End of Appendix 4.